Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Yes, the international break has disappeared and the real football can commence once again. Match day 10 was spectacular. Traumtors galore, lots of drama, plenty of red cards. It was a bit of a weird one, but what we did see is some fantastic football that really pleased the masses. To help me discuss all of the action from match day 10 is German football consultant and scout for Nordenser, Adam Kahn. Adam, welcome to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. How are you?
Matthew, it's a pleasure to be on. Talk about another crazy game week in the second Bundesliga. Because there's not really a game week where you can say it's a crazy game week. But nevertheless, there's good storylines, bad storylines, a lot to uncover this week.
Absolutely. It's normal, as other leagues probably wouldn't experience this as the normality. The Zweite Bundesliga, this kind of behavior is all but normal. And we'll start reviewing the action with the Topspiel game at the Merkur Spiel Arena. It was Fortuna Düsseldorf versus Kaiserslautern. This was the first of the three games for the Fortuna for Aale, where tickets were free. That's it, the best price of football you can go around. And the fans were treated to an absolute barnstormer. 52,000 made their way to Düsseldorf to see this incredible game, but it wasn't incredible for the home fans because in the opening 32 minutes, Kaiserslautern raced to a 3-0 win. 3-0 win, oh boy. 3-0 lead. Richard Tashi opened the scoring. His effort took a massive deflection off Jordi De Vries. Jamil Siebert with an own goal. He tried to do the right thing, but he redirected it into his own net. And then Marlon Ritter getting his second goal of the campaign on 32 minutes. So in 11 minutes, Kaiserslautern absolutely raced away. And it seemed like maybe this might be a tall task, but someone forgot to tell Düsseldorf because Ayo Tanaka scores on 36 minutes to make it 3-1 at the break, and then they carried that momentum. Matthias Zimmermann gets very much similar to Tashi's goal. Massive deflection. Beats Julian Kral to make it 2-3. And for mine, the best goal of the game on 57 minutes. Fantastic work movement from Düsseldorf. It starts with Klaus through to Appelkamp. Zimmermann with this absolutely picture-perfect ball, and Klaus with a brilliant finish for his second goal of the campaign. And then Ayo Tanaka with his second goal of the game. Really poor defending from Kaiserslautern to give him the space and the time to shoot, and he didn't need a second opportunity. He scores, and that is your final, 4-3. Look, it's very rare do we say that the Topspieler is worthy of its name, but this game was fantastic for a lot of reasons. And for me, I look at Ayo Tanaka as in particular. He's been in and out of the team this season, but playing as a number 8, allowed to be a bit more versatile. The numbers stack up as someone who not only helped in the goal-scoring department, but helped solidify that Düsseldorf defense midfield throughout the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Tanaka is really someone who flourishes in that slightly more advanced role. I think you see it with him in the Japanese national team. We saw it at the World Cup. We saw it also in the latest international friendlies against Germany, for example, where he scored as well, playing ahead of a more destroyer-type midfielder in Wataru Endo. And we saw that on Saturday, and he's really, really good in that role. He has a lot of creativity. I think alongside Ludovic Reis, you would probably say those two are the best on-ball talents in the second Bundesliga. I don't think anybody could argue too much of that statement. And yeah, I mean, a fantastic player in a Düsseldorf squad, which has taken on leaps and bounds in the last few weeks. You look at kind of the squad that entered this season with Daniel Ginczek up top, completely limited midfield, and the signings that they made. Okay, Solis, of course, was not having his best game, was subbed off at halftime, but he's been an excellent addition to the squad. In midfield also, they brought in talent close to the dead in the window. So yeah, this squad is really coming together as a promotion candidate, and a really exciting match, which was a great advert for the Fortuna for All project. So hopefully Düsseldorf have amassed some new fans from the really remarkable 52,000 that joined on Saturday.
100%, and I don't think anyone would have really felt, this was going to be the outcome of the game. Both teams were in the top six heading into the match day. They've both, in my opinion anyway, outperforming where I expected them to be at this point of the season. And yeah, I think for both sides, you can take the positives. Like, obviously, Dirk Schuster, who's known for the dark arts and the way that he wants his team to play, will be extremely disappointed because A, they lost Ragnar Ake at the break, and they just really became very limited with Terrence Boyd in that sort of final third. And you could see that as they were unable to generate chances, and you could understand a team for sitting a little bit deeper at a 3-1 advantage. But once Zimmerman got that second goal straight after the break, you could see that the panic was starting to tick over and the mistakes started to happen. And Dusseldorf, credit to Dusseldorf, because they've had a few games at home. The Paderborn game in particular sticks out, where they've absolutely dominated a team and failed to take advantage. But when the opportunities came in this game in particular, they were flawless. And it does actually boast good numbers for them, because we talked about how great their defense has been this season. Can't say too much about, they were a bit unlucky in this one. But offensively, we were unsure. They've got Vincent Vermey, who was leading the line in this one. But they've shown that they've got a lot of versatility, who can roll in several different places. And it's exciting to see. But I think one thing before I finish this rambling monologue is the credit has to go to Daniel Tune, because he showed why he's a top-tier coach in this division. It would have been so easy at 3-0 down to sort of, oh, we'll put the cue on the rack, it's a bad game, we'll get on with it in the next fixture. But they never gave up, and to be fair, they deserve to win the game in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Tune has shown a lot in the past, right? Also, kind of the circumstances where he came in as a Düsseldorf manager, coming into a side that was in the relegation zone in, what was that, 2021, 2022, and really kind of getting the absolute most out of the squad pretty early. Also, kind of his experience at Hamburg, a club of that stature under difficult circumstances. So this is a manager who's definitely ready for a top-flight job, ideally a top-flight job with Düsseldorf. But if Düsseldorf doesn't manage it, I think there's going to be quite a few clubs in for Tune over the summer. And as you mentioned with Kaiserslautern, I mean, we talked about Düsseldorf and the important business that they finished late in the transfer window. But I look at Ragnar Ache as potentially the most important signing of any club in that final week of the window. He's been excellent for Kaiserslautern amidst Terence's Boyd's really poor run of form this season. I think Ache suits Kaiserslautern's style of play so well. He's a very combative center forward, very good in the air. So he really would have been a great player to have on the field when someone like Opoku came on in the second half and really began that high crossing style of play.
Absolutely, 100% agree. Will Kaiserslautern get back to winning ways next week? Will they welcome Hamburg in the Topspiel game? That is a World Feed game, which will be quite fascinating. We'll talk about Hamburg in Group 2. Fortuna Düsseldorf, they are at Eintracht Braunschweig on Friday night. They will feel like they are a real opportunity of taking another 3 points next weekend. Now to the Chaos Club. Let's talk about Schalke. It has been a chaotic month for the club from Gelsenkirchen, and they were hoping for Carol Gerrit and the team that they would get their first win in quite some time when they made the journey to Karlsruhe on Sunday afternoon. And if for the travelling support were hoping that they were going to get an improved performance, well, they were gravely mistaken, because it was another limp showing and a bit of a disappointing performance from the boys in blue. 3-0 defeat in the end. We saw Gerrit implement his 3-5-2 system, and it seems that with the defensive three, or with the defensive parts they've got, it's going to be a massive work in progress, because where Karlsruhe got all three of their goals from, they came from balls into the box, opportunistic finishing, the last Stindl goal, which, it looks like Matanovic has a heavy touch and it falls to Stindl. He gets an assist for that anyway, statistically, so happy for Matanovic. The second goal, Baumgart loses Matanovic, and it's a brilliant finish. Great ball in from Sebastian Jung. And the third goal is an own goal where Matrachani is trying to sort of stop Zizhevadze from getting a touch, and he puts the ball in the back of the net. But it's kind of one of those challenging things for Gerrit in particular, where you have to call for patience. It's going to take time. This is a new system they want to develop. It's also trying to figure out what pieces are going to work. The other part of that is they're 16th results didn't go their way also this weekend, and there is a gap between them in 16th and 15th, and Schalke fans were just crying for a response in the opening hour of the game. They were non-existent.
Yeah, and I think anybody who doesn't think that they're in a relegation battle now should really kind of wake up to what is reality. I mean, you look at last year's table, Bielefeld, Sandhausen, Regensburg, all of them were relegated, and after 10 match days, all of them had more points than Schalke do right now. So it really is a tricky situation for Gerdatz. And I mean, you look at the defenders in this squad, and you know, guys like Mascherani was excellent throughout the run of last season. He was arguably Schalke's best and most reliable defender, and was a U21 German international because of it. Or Timo Baumgart, he was, I mean, 2 years ago for Union Berlin, one of the best defenders in the Bundesliga, helping Union to what was, a Europa League finish at the end of the season. So very good defenders individually, but you just see how this backline and tandem is not working together. You see how one player steps up, another one drops that back, how often a Schalke right back, for example, is behind the center backs, keeping players on side. So there's just really, really systematic issues which will not be fixed after one match day for Gerrard. And, you know, the 3-5-2, which you use at Union Saint-Gilloise, looks to be a good system maybe for Schalke in these moments. They have that extra defender to add a bit of security, but it's not to say that that alone will get Schalke through this division, because every match is a competitive fixture. Nobody is down and out this season, and there's never a fixture where Schalke can say, okay, we're going to win regardless of what our form is, because just based on the players enough, it will be good enough. That's just not the case this season.
No, and I look at the defensive three that was selected. Kalash, who lasted a half and he was yanked. Kaminski and Baumgarten. One thing screams slow, very slow. Yeah. And teams that can move the ball with pace or can get balls into the box quickly. And you look, they had Schleusner and Matanovic, both who, not the quickest guys in the world, but they've got those three covered. Once the ball gets in behind, it's dangerous. And when you've got the two wide players, so you've got Ovuyan, who loves to get forward. We know what he wants to do. But you could see when any chance that they could get the ball wide to Jung, who was overlapping, they would do it. Gets that ball in the box, they get the goal. It's a team that doesn't trust itself defensively. That's why they are equal worst in the league with 23 goals conceded, equal worst with Osnabrück. And they just, you know, they struggled offensively. The best chance in the game for Schalke was in the first half. Now, if Brian Lasma scores that goal, it's 1-1, and it's a completely different game, maybe a bit more confidence. But they just don't trust. No one seems to trust each other. And, you know, unfortunately for them, you've got to figure it out. As silly as it sounds, Hanover, who we spoke about off air, but we'll talk about them in Group 2, Nürnberg away. If you wanted a fan friendship victory, they'd be hoping that Nürnberg might be feeling generous that day. But then they play Elversberg on a Friday night before the next international break, and Elversberg are no easy feat. So we say there's no easy games in the Zweite Bundesliga, but for Gerrits in particular, he got a pretty rude awakening. It's not going to be easy, and B, every team wants to beat Schalke. It's like a cup final for them, and Karlsruhe beating the club from Gelsenkirchen at home was a big moment, because every big chance that they had, they took them.
Yeah, and I mean, just on Karlsruhe briefly, I mean, this is also for them a huge, huge victory. This is arguably the two sides who needed to win the most. I think Karlsruhe, they haven't won a match since the 27th of August. So for them, big, big points for a squad I think many predicted to actually be in a promotion contention this season as well, alongside Schalke. You know, new stadium, some pretty impactful players signed over the summer. Lars Stindl, probably the best player you could even say who's been in the second Bundesliga for the past 2 or 3 years. He's a player who, even in the top flight last season with Borussia Mönchengladbach, was still one of their best players. And he really made a difference again this week, because I think what Kauser did well was finally move Stindl back to that number 10 role. The past few weeks, he was often playing as one of the center forwards, and you see Stindl, okay, he's not the fastest, he's not the quickest by any means, but he has that great eye for a teammate, the great eye for a pass, a long-range strike, and yeah, assisting that first goal, you saw just how impactful Stindl can be when dropped into a bit of a deeper role.
Yeah, and look, this was the big question mark for them in the season, was with the system that Eichner likes to play. He likes to have the three pack in sort of the eights and the six, and then he has the number 10 with those two wider those two midfielders on the sort of the wide side being a little bit quite narrow, but Vanitzek and Nabil given the flexibility to sort of free roam and move around, and they both, you know, they play that well, quite well. But then it was, okay, so Fabian Schleusner was their top goal scorer last season. They've tried a number of different players. Now, Matanovic was someone that a lot of us were quite high on a few seasons ago. He had that really good campaign with St. Pauli, went to Frankfurt, came back to St. Pauli, found himself not really in sort of the look for Hertzler. And he's sort of trying to rebuild his credibility. And look, great time to do it against a big club. And now Eichner will be hoping that with Schleusner, with Matanovic, Stindl playing as that 10 where he can create with Vanitzek and Nabil. Like, that should be the nucleus for them. The other problem is defensively, throughout the season, we've talked about how bad they've been at the defensive end. First clean sheet since that win against Eintracht Braunschweig. Like, that's problematic. But they were fortunate in many ways that they had a team that just offered very little. So I guess what I'm saying is they've got three really tough games coming up. St. Pauli next week away, which will be extraordinarily difficult. Then Paderborn. What could be the ceiling for this team? Because 15th, they're not heading into this match though, they were 15th. They are not a 15th place team in this league.
Yeah, I mean, it's always so difficult, right? Because, I mean, what? They're 5 points away from the relegation zone and 7 points away from the third promotion place. So it really, even though we're 10 matches in, it can still go in either direction. I think that Karlsruhe ultimately aren't at the same level of a Düsseldorf, of a St. Pauli, of a Hamburg. I don't see them anymore in that promotion race, but I think they do have the quality, and I think they do have the durability to kind of end mid-table, around where I see a Nürnberg, a Greuther Fürth ending the season as well. I don't think they'll have anything to do with the relegation battle. And I think that mid-table finish, upper mid-table, is probably where this squad can end up. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, between 8th and 14th in the second Bundesliga every season is about 4 points. So there's really not a lot to separate saying, oh yeah, we narrowly missed out on promotion, and oh my God, we barely missed out on relegation.
The double jeopardy of the Zweite Bundesliga at its finest. So yeah, at St. Pauli for Karlsruhe, Schalke playing Hanover at home on Saturday afternoon. That is a world feed game. We spoke about Paderborn. We spoke about St. Pauli. They went head-to-head on match day 10 at the Home Deluxe Arena, and what an interesting game this was. I don't think anyone would have pictured that the opening goal of this game would be an effort from inside their own half, and Florent Moslier took flight from way downtown. 58 metres it was measured, his effort on goal, catching Nikolai Vasil ice cold off his line. If memory serves me right, I reckon that's the third or fourth goal we've seen this season where a striker's come in from close to halfway, keeper's well off his line, has just taken the risk and had a shot and taken advantage, and Muslia did so. Halftime couldn't come quick enough for St. Pauli, but they made adjustments at the break. They bring in Connor Metcalf, Elias Saad, and instant impact. Metcalf should have scored. He had an effort where brilliant pass from Eggestein, and unfortunately, maybe the ball bobbed up on Metcalf because he basically shot that ball outside the stadium. They do get the equalising goal, and it's a wonderful set piece. Ritzke to Hartl with a first-time cross, and Jojo Eggestein with a brilliant header to beat Janne Kuyt. It's Eggestein's fourth goal in three games, and he's really starting to solidify himself as that number nine. We talked about how much they need a number nine, and he could be that solution for them. They did then take the lead 12 minutes before the end of normal time. Eggestein's effort cannoning off the post and it falling to Jackson Irvine. He scored against New Zealand earlier in the week. He then gets the goal to make it 2-1. But unfortunately for them, the lead lasted all but 4 minutes. Sørloth Conte, who is just an absolute pocket rocket, blitzes past Halkovar and he puts in a cracking ball for Philip Bilbia, and Bilbia puts it in the back of the net. His second goal in consecutive games. And the game ends all square. What a fantastic game this was. It was really a tale of two halves. Paderborn seemed in control. They made it very difficult for St. Pauli. Not having Eric Smith really hurt Fabian Hertzler's plans in the first half. But once they adjusted at halftime, St. Pauli were in complete control. And you could sense that they were potentially a bit frustrated they didn't win this game in the end.
Yeah, I think Paderborn are a side who, you know, they had a really poor start to the season. They looked well off the pace. I mean, you could even make an argument that Kvasniak was lucky to stay in his job, especially after kind of the off-field issues that were around his tenure at the end of last year. But they found their form a bit. And of course, I mean, when you look at the quality in the team, guys like Sergio Conte, one of the most underrated players in the second Bundesliga, in my opinion. I think his electric pace, his dynamism is something that few clubs can really compete with. And also guys like Muslia. I mean, his technical ability, again, is you saw with the goal, but also his general play is just really, really excellent. And a big question mark remains Mats Kruse, right? He's only played 26 minutes across the past four games. This weekend, again, an unused substitute. So even though he is back in the squad from injury, there's not really the role available for what is ultimately a luxury player. Like you look at someone like Lars Stindl at Karlsruhe and you say, okay, Lars Stindl has the technical ability, but he also has the off-ball work rate. He has the leadership. He has that team player mentality versus Mats Kruse. I think there's a lot more question marks around what do you get when you're not getting Mats Kruse on the ball in the final third? And that's something where I think Kvasniak right now has probably made the right decision, particularly against a top side like San Pauli, to, you know, go with a bit of a more combative midfield with Obermeier, Hansen, and Muslia.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And it's not often you'd say that about, well, we've got Mats Kruse and we have to play him. But as we've seen, this team was perfectly fine without him last season when he was a free agent playing poker and enjoying the high life. But like the way I would see it is if I'm looking at what Paderborn want to be under and what really suits the Kvasniak way, get the ball to Muslia. He in terms of creating high scoring opportunities, progressing the ball. Obviously, he's a threat from the long range. Turns out he's a threat from 58 meters out nowadays. But in a general sense, you would at this stage of their careers, you would rather have Muslia leading the way in terms of being that creative outlet, someone who can track back, someone who's proven they can play as a left wing back, left midfielder, very versatile player, versus someone who's towards the end of his career has known to showcase a individualistic mentality. And if Paderborn, you know, who don't have the biggest budget comparative to some of the other teams in the division, Paderborn see themselves as a club that is punching above their weight, you're going to go with the guys who are in form, and Muslia showed that once again in this game. I do want to touch about St. Pauli because obviously top of the league, they've been in rocket scoring form, great defensively. But it was interesting because they lose Smith before the game. Trigola comes in. We're going to see Vol with a bit more responsibility in possession. But it was quite impressive what Paderborn were able to do. They really nullified St. Pauli's ability to progress the ball in the first half. Now, credit to Hertzler, who's really proven that his hire to come in midway through last season was just a stroke of genius and potentially a hidden gem of a manager. His ability to adjust to the game state and immediately get the control, get more actions with Hartl, more flexibility. They bring Metcalf in, who can play as an eight, can play out on the right. Bringing Oladipo to the left, it really showed that, you know, Hertzler's really been able to adapt, read the game quite well. And once they got on top, they, excluding the goal they conceded, they didn't look like they were going to relinquish control.
Yeah, I think, of course, Eric Smith, I mean, that's a huge, and not departure, but a huge injury before the game, right? He's the key build-up player in this system, playing at the center of that back three, really kind of carrying the ball forward or playing the ball through that first line. And you saw, especially over the weekend with San Pauli, how Jadson Irvine and Marcel Hertzl, as only two midfielders, how they can often do the work of three in the midfield. I mean, that duo is better than many sides in the Bundesliga have. I think that's easy to say right now, especially when you look at some of the clubs in the Bundesliga this season. I mean, Irvine, of course, Hertzl, both of them have attacking output, but also against the ball, really hard work rate, can cover a lot of ground and make up for that missing piece in midfield. So, yeah, that's definitely one of San Pauli's biggest strengths this season. And particularly Hertha, I mean, you constantly just put question marks up to Arminia Bielefeld why they would let a player like that go when going up to the Bundesliga, especially seeing where they are at right now. But also an interesting point, I think, which you also mentioned, Johannes Eggestein, because that center forward piece was really the key area going into the summer or going into the start of the season. You know, Daschna left, and even before that, you didn't really have that all-encompassing center forward since Dido Burgstaller's departure, someone who was going to guarantee you 15, 20 goals. And I still don't think Johannes Eggestein is going to be kind of a top striker in the second Bundesliga, but to see him at least finding his feet, three goals, one assist in the last four games is so important for Sampdoria to, you know, take a bit of the pressure off of Jackson Irvine scoring headers every single weekend or just generally having a 15-goal season.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think with them, it'll be by committee, so we'll have patches with Eggestein. We still haven't seen Simon Zoller yet either. You know, they had
good point as well.
They had Andreas Alba starting the season. Now, he was active. He showcased real presence, except he couldn't score, and that was part of the issue. But you look at where they're at, though, and you're feeling really comfortable. I think a lot of us had St. Pauli as this, geez, you know, their squad's looking pretty good. And the question mark was, A, can they find a striker who can be sustainable with the versatile wide players they've got in that attacking three? And B, was that win streak that Hertzler had when he first came in, was that just a fluke? Turns out it was no fluke. It was the real. They were the real deal. They're tactically very versatile. They have a very strong game plan. They defend incredibly well. Not often do they concede two goals in a game. They're very stable at their defensive end. And you look at who they've got the next 3 weeks. Karlsruhe, they'll feel they can win that game. Elversberg away will be tricky, but winnable. Hanover also on Friday night. So their schedule is quite winnable for them. For Paderborn, at Hertha, at Karlsruhe, home for Nürnberg. Also, with the way that they're tracking Paderborn, they will also feel like they can win all three of those games. So it will be fascinating to see how both sides get on. Let's take our first break. And on the other side, we'll discuss our Group 2 games starting at the Heinz von Heiden Arena. It's Hanover and Magdeburg. Hanover were hoping to get back to winning ways. They were defeated last time out heading into the international break, but home place has been quite favourable for them. They welcome Magdeburg on a Friday night. Magdeburg have been in a bit of a slump, and they were hoping to turn the tide. Well, they didn't start particularly well in this game. The opening goal coming 10 minutes in, Enzo Leopold's effort deflected off Daniel Haber and past Dominik Reimann. Reimann confused, as you would expect. When had Haber left the ball, it would have gone straight to the goalkeeper. There was really an inter-battle between the two sides. It was between Boris Attic and Ron Robert Zieler, and they did battle quite often in this game. Attic shooting from range and continuously shooting from range, and Zieler was very much up to the task, but on 57 minutes, Attic finally made the breakthrough. An incredible goal with just such weight and technique, and Zieler, who had been flawless throughout this game, just couldn't get his hand after this brilliant goal. A player who's potentially got inflated numbers this season is Cedric Toikert. Now, this isn't a dig at him in particular, but heading into this match, 5 of his 7 goals have been scored from the penalty spot. As they say, they all count the same, and on 61 minutes, you better believe it, penalty for Hanover. It was a real clumsy sort of situation, but there was a handball from Daniel Elfadili. I don't know why his hand's up there. It doesn't have to be there. He handles and Toikert says, thank you very much. I will be the league's top scorer with 8 goals this season. And that would be enough. Magdeburg just not really doing enough in this particular game. They had lots of possession, which as one of the top 3 possession teams in the division, that's what you'd expect them to do. But Hanover were able to create the better opportunities on goal in this game. And as much as you'd like to see, say, Magdeburg were at least creating chances on goal, I think Hanover were probably the better side in this game in the end.
Yeah, and I guess on Magdeburg first, it's now their 5th winless match in a row after what was, I mean, a promotion-worthy start to the campaign. Magdeburg were excellent throughout those early weeks. And I think you see again kind of the topic which is going to stick with Magdeburg as long as Christian Tietz is there. Magdeburg are their own worst enemy, right? I mean, the style of play that they have, the aggressiveness in possession, the risks that they take in possession are what make Magdeburg so exciting and which allow them to often play beyond their individual means. But it also puts them in situations where no other club in the second Bundesliga would be conceding goals like they do. I mean, you look at a player like El Fadli, his error for the first goal, again, just Magdeburg trying to be super brave in possession to take risks. Daniel Heber also one or two times this season, really just you know, a back pass or a silly ball into the midfield where you say there's no danger whatsoever, but Magdeburg take risks in zones where any other club would shy away from. So that's something which Tietz's 11 really still need to kind of find the right balance between, okay, we take the risks on the ball to facilitate our attacking style of play, but we also in the right moments maybe hit a ball long to a center forward like Schüle, who has the ability to also hold up balls and play in a long ball system.
Yeah, absolutely. I think teams know what to look for. I said teams way too many times, but this is a league, and all leagues are like this in the sense that when you put the research in from Monday onwards, you know what, you get an idea of what each team is going to do. Now, Tietz's style of football is very identifiable. It's, you know, only a few teams in the division play in that sort of high risk, high reward system. And, you know, we've seen this for the past couple of seasons now where we know defensively they are not particularly great and they do make mistakes. And as you mentioned, Adam, their mistakes really get them. Whereas some teams can, you know, they'll have a tackle here or they'll be able to win possession back. But when Magdeburg makes a mistake, the other team just seems to make them pay. Case in point with the opening goal, because the opening goal is, it's just clumsy. It's very clumsy. Yeah. It's very cumbersome. It's inviting trouble. And, you know, you don't get the sense that they've got really strong ball playing defenders who can really build the play up. And it allows teams who are very good at pressing the ball, not saying Hanover are particularly strong at doing that, and having Vogelsammer as the focal point of their attack this weekend, you know, he's not really a high-intensity, high-pressing guy, but big body sort of forward. It was really difficult to watch. But also Magdeburg's inability to break down the defensive three of Hanover, 8 of their 14 shots come from range, and Attic was bulk on the shots from range. Every time he got over a dead ball, you're like, he's shooting. There's no way he's not shooting. And on occasions, he caught Zila out. I think there was the one where Zila's like, oh, he's going to cross, and he shoots. And I think Zila goes into the goal, and it's all kind of crazy.
From a free kick, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, so it begs the question, because this has probably been the issue for them over the last few weeks, is they're not getting the ball into Schüle. They're trying to figure out what their best three is again. Like, I thought Cheka, Schüle, and Attic, that's your best three. I didn't have Attic last time because of the yellow card suspension. But, they seem to have lost their touch offensively. We know how good they can be going forward. But when it's not working offensively for them, their defense becomes a real liability. And it was proven again, the individual errors and you know, they're going to have to live with that. And their next three games, well, two of them anyway, are not going to be particularly easy.
Yeah, and I think on going forward, I mean, I looked at, okay, which clubs are most reliant on one player to facilitate their attack. I looked at Anthony Uja at Eintracht Braunschweig, and then closely followed behind them is Baris Atik at Magdeburg. I mean, one goal, 6 assists this season, by far the most score points in this side, and everything in possession runs through Atik. I mean, he picks up balls, he shoots from range, as you say. It's crazy to say he's not really a team player when he has 6 assists, but there is a bit of this, you know, individualist ego mentality about his style of play, which helps Magdeburg. It doesn't take away from them because he's just a really exceptional player on the ball. And then on your point also defensively with the errors they make, it's difficult for Tietz because, you know, if he had Dayo Upamecano and a Mats Hummels at center back, then nobody would be lamenting him for playing this style of play. But the issue is that he has a budget where he needs to develop these players into ball-playing center backs rather than be able to go out into the market and buy a ball playing center back. You know, it's just not available to him. And that's where I think we see it with Tietz, we see it with Tim Walter also to maybe even a greater degree, this inability to really move away from your ideal match plan in the right moments to say, okay, we play this for 70 minutes, but now we're 1-0 up and now we shoot the ball on. And it's not pretty, but ultimately it's a result business. And that's where I see, particularly with Tietz and then particularly with Tim Walter, a lot of development potential still in their managerial style.
100%. And look, we've spoken about Walter for 3 years now, and we know his style of play. We'll talk about them next. Quick word on Hanover. And I think the general consensus on them at the moment is, I'm not buying what you're selling until we see them after the winter break, because last season they were fifth heading into the winter break, which they never felt like they should have been fifth at that particular time. But I think what's different about them this season is I spoke about it with Alexander Keener back on match day 3, and he covers quite a lot of Hanover. They needed someone creative in their midfield too, because they play sort of the three at the back, the four midfielders and the three attackers, the 3-4-3, but typically the two are a bit narrower. They needed someone who could play as an 8, and so you've got Fabian Kunzer, who is a clear number 6. He's a destroyer. You know what he is. He's a very defensive midfielder. You know what you're going to get from him. But they had Christiansen with him. That didn't really work because they're quite similar in the way that they like to play. But Enzo Leopold in particular, who's, you know, got credentials playing as an U21 international for the German side, he brings that creativity and to have a sort of he can play both ways. He's good at least getting back into position. But having Kunzer in particular allows for example, you see Halstenberg will bring the ball up. Sometimes he'll go further than the midfield, and Kunzer immediately will just drop back, easily fits in that defensive 3. So I think that flexibility that they've now got in the midfield is certainly helping Hanover going forward. Now, again, I need to see it until we get to about match day 25 if I'm going to buy stocks in a Hanover. But at the moment, it's clear that Lytle has been able to adapt a little bit more than he did last season, and they're getting the results. If you look at their last 5 games, you know, 3 wins in their last 5, and I think them being fourth, strong defensively, they've only given up 12 goals so far this campaign, which is a clear improvement from the last campaign. They're heading in the right direction, but again, we need to hold off just a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a similar topic to when we spoke about Zampaoli, right? It's just so important to get the right profiles in midfield when you're only playing with 2 in there. And we say with Zampaoli, obviously with Irvine and Hertel, you have the perfect combination. But as you rightly mentioned with Hannover, a lot of times it was too defensive, or there was too much distance for Fabian Kunzer to make up if he was paired with a really attacking player like a Louis Schaub, for example. And now I think it's better in midfield, but as you say, I still feel that it's going forward more individuals rather than a real distinct match plan from Stefan Leitl in possession, or at least in possession in the final third. Mm. I think that right now it's still the fact that, you know, Louis Schaub, Cedric Teuchert, Fuglsammer, Hava Nielsen, when he's fit as well, he's been really good, and even Nico Trisoldi from the bench. Mm. These are all players who are you know, top half. Maybe Trisoldi not, but still the rest of them, top half, second Bundesliga players, and many of them have even excelled in moments in the Bundesliga. So I think from that respect, it's still kind of individual quality that is keeping them kind of floating in this promotion battle. But I struggle to see a distinct attacking match plan to see them overcome a top side like Zampaoli, like Hamburg.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, their next 3 games, they got Schalke away, which they will feel like the way things are going, very good matchup for them. Then they've got the Niedersachsen derby against Eintracht Braunschweig. There were some shenanigans on the weekend where Hanover Ultras had somehow put some smoke into the Braunschweig away area in their game against Elversberg. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who has the biggest remote control of all? That was Hanover. And then they had in their stadium This massive choreo, always on a leash, yet unrestrainable. Amazing. But also, before the international break, Hannover play St. Pauli away. If we're talking about genuine tests for this team, obviously they'll, you know, winning Niedersachsen Derby is big for them, but beating St. Pauli strengthens your credentials. If we're looking at it from a point of view of it's a results business, we all understand that. But if we want to, genuinely buy into what you're selling at the moment, win that game,
Yeah.
And I think, and I think that's a good test for them, because then we can say, hey, now we've had a year and a, you know, close to a year and a half of Stefan Leitl at Hannover. They're expected to be a team that challenges for at least the playoffs. You know, at the playoff spot would be great for them. How good can they really be if they can be competitive against St. Pauli? Then we would, at least we'll have an idea of where they should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Magdeburg, they've got Elversberg, which, oh, that is going to be a cracking game to watch. Just how those two teams go about it. Then they've got Hamburg away in a top spiel, and then Hansa Rostock in sort of an Ost Derby situation before the international break. Let's talk about Hamburg. They welcomed Greuther Fürth to the Volkspark Stadion. Just under 56,000 made their way to see Hamburg score a much-needed win. It has been a very difficult spell for them heading into the international break. They were winless in their last four, which included defeats to Elversberg and Osnabrück. They should have won in Wiesbaden heading into the break, but they beat Fürth 2-0, goals from Jonas Mirfurt, who... a wonderful cross in from Laszlo Benes, really poorly defended by Fürth. Mirfurt scores, and then Robert Glatzel gets his sixth goal of the campaign, and that was really it for the goals. Glatzel thought he had a third, but there was offside. He was offside in the build-up. Daniel Hoy Fernandez saved a penalty in the second half after Ramos fouled Dennis Sabeni. Fernandez makes the save. For me, like with the Fürth's perspective, it was such a what-if game. After they conceded, they went down and nearly scored with Julian Green. When they conceded the second goal, they nearly scored with Simon Atzer. They have the penalty, which, had they scored, it's 2-1. Game gets a bit more interesting. But I never felt like Hamburg were comfortable in the sense that, you know, oh, this will be sort of a doddle. Because Fürth was still able to progress the ball forward. It's just what Fürth does defensively sometimes is really perplexing. And they used a similar system to what they did against Hertha, where they gave up five goals. I thought the way they set the team up, Zorniger set the team up, was a bit strange. And I think the two goals that Hamburg scored were far too easy when you consider the situations. And maybe if Hamburg were a little bit more efficient in the final third, look at the Dompey miss in the second half. You know, 2-0 is, it's kind of a weird one where 2-0 seems flattering, but it also doesn't seem flattering at the same time.
Yeah, and I think on Fürth initially, I mean, it's a very young squad. You have, of course, veterans like Julian Green, like Harald Götze, but in general, I mean, there's a lot of players who are highly, highly talented, but just don't have a lot of senior exposure. You look at this team maybe in 4 or 5 years' time and you say, this team could compete for the Europa League in the Bundesliga. Mm. But right now, these are just talents coming through. Guys like Robert Wagner, Tim Lenfeli, Jonas Orbit, all really, really excellent young German players. But you see, you know, as you mentioned, they have chances. They also have opportunities to defend better. But in these key moments, they don't necessarily have the tools to come apart. From a venue like the Volkspark Arena in Hamburg and actually come out with a victory or come out with a point. And that's why we're seeing Fürth really inconsistent this season. You know, they have moments where they look like a promotion contender, and they have moments where they look like they could be in a relegation battle.
Yeah, and look, the system that they're being asked to implement, very you know, there's elements of the Red Bull system with Alexander Zorniger. It's high intensity, it requires teams that are able to press effectively. It requires lots of work rate, and you can see at times they can get caught out on the break. You know, the goal that didn't count for Hamburg was a great example of that sort of high pressing line, and you know, it took one ball and Glatzel was out the back. But for Hamburg, it was a game of resolve for them. They lose Van der Bremt and Rice within the opening 15 minutes of the game. Van der Bremt has a hamstring injury, which is usually about 2 to 4 weeks. Rice dislocated his shoulder again, so he's going to miss time, which is a great shame for them. But the luxury for them, Hamburg, was that they had Emmanuel Farai on the bench. And Farai is someone who comes highly rated, gone through the Dortmund youth system, was great at Braunschweig last season. And at least that's comfort, because Farai filled the role that Rice typically operates in. And you can see Farai's later to get forward, created some really good chances, is able to provide the attacking threat. So I'm not worried about that. What does worry me is that they've got really good pacey wide players like Yatta, like Dompe. But man, they're just so wasteful in front of goal. And I look back at the Dompe chance where Dompe could either he could have raffled it off to Yatta. He could have done what I think most coaches would teach you, which is to shoot across the goalkeeper, and somehow he missed it the near post. It was quite of extraordinary.
Yeah, I just have the kicker lineups ahead of me right here, and they always have the player ratings afterwards. And I mean, Hamburg 1-2-0, and Yatta has a 5 rating, and Dompe has a 5.5, right? So that tells you a lot. And I think, I mean, you nailed it really there. I mean, Yatta is one of the worst crossers in the second Bundesliga, and Dompe is one of the worst finishers in the second Bundesliga, and that can cause quite a few headaches for HSV fans. And almost that's why I'm really, really frustrated that Rice is injured, because I actually would have liked to see Farai maybe come in for Yatta, and then you have still a fully fit Rice, Benes, and Metford midfield. Because you look at the second goal that Farai creates, and it's literally him in a wide position playing that cross in for Glatzel for a simple finish. And I was almost quite confused, actually, why Tim Walter hasn't given Farai the start a little bit sooner since returning from injury, because he's been fit the last 3 weeks or so, but he's never really wanted to play him out wide. Even someone like Öztun Ali, who just simply is not the same player he was 6 years ago, is still starting ahead of him. So yeah, there's still a lot of question marks to this Hamburg side. And like you say, I mean, Yatta and Dompe, they still of course have qualities, but there is a lot of frustration seeing those two wingers. And I just don't see anyone really coming in behind them who's better. Königsdorf, really, really inconsistent, like Yatta and Dompe, and doesn't necessarily bring the same qualities, especially not for Yatta. I think Yatta is one of the best defending wingers in the division, and Öztun Ali as well just simply does not have the quality, in my opinion.
You see, I thought I was one of the only people who genuinely believed that Farai could play as sort of that left winger, right wing kind of role.
He
did it on occasions for Braunschweig last season. I don't see why he can't. He has the individual qualities, technically very sound in possession. And if you're looking for a reason to give Robert Glatzel more chances to score than the 6 goals he's got this season, I agree with you. I think at some stage you'd like to see them experiment on that particular role, because he can be a really good driving force. And we know what their midfield's like. It's the same midfield they've had last year, and it's very efficient. It works very well. You know, Meffert plays as that anchor. You know, Benes has shown to be a goal scoring threat this season, but also can provide a lot of opportunities for his teammates. But I think we're going to learn a lot about this team in the next 3 weeks, because there is an expectation that they should probably win all 3 of these games. Kaiserslautern away, which is never easy, but Magdeburg at home, you know, a team that very much, you know, will play to Hamburg's strengths. And then Kiel, we know, are defensively still a bit fragile, but they've shown that they can score goals. So I don't know. I think Hamburg will get to learn a bit more about them. Important win for them ultimately on the match day. They equal top now with St. Pauli. Just goal difference separates them. Fürth, they welcome Osnabrück on Friday night before making the journey to Kaiserslautern and then ending the run of games until the international break against Fortuna Düsseldorf. Let's make a move to the Max Morlock Stadion. Nürnberg hosted Hertha BSC. Hertha have been in decent form. Nürnberg, not so much. They were beaten 5-1 heading into the international break, and they didn't get off to the best of starts. Smail Prevoyak opened the scoring on 15 minutes. It was a case of Matenya indecision. You've either got to go or you stay at home, and he got caught in no man's land. He left Jimro in a very uncomfortable situation, and Prevoyak backheeled it like it was a Jogger Bonita Nike advertisement. from like 2006. It was a good finish for him, his fourth of the campaign. He's shown offensively very good asset for them. But this game really wasn't Hertha's to win, and it never felt like they had the right to win the game. Nürnberg were just so much better in this game. They get the penalty just before the break, given up by Toni Leisner. Ozan, who's been a revelation for them, and we know that there are clubs that are very interested in bringing him in. Not a surprise, he's going to be a very talented footballer for years to come. His penalty saved. Tjaak Ernst with a, you know, able to get a knee, shin, any part of the leg to keep it 1-0 at the break for Hertha. But eventually the dam was going to break, and Jens Kastrup with an excellent goal through a gaggle of players. Florian Flick tried very hard to claim that goal, but those who credit the goals weren't willing to give it to him. He celebrated for naught. Then an own goal for Toni Leisner. Just brilliant play from Nürnberg when they were able to exploit the wide areas. Cross in, Leisner either has to make a play on the ball or Hayashi's going to score. He makes a play very similar to Matriciani, plays it into his own net. And then Hayashi, who came in the summer, they've been hoping that he was going to find the back of the net. He scored a few times, but they've all been offside. This time he gets the goal. 3-1 is your final. Nürnberg into the top half of the standings. That's something we haven't said about the club over the past couple of seasons. But I think the thing that's really exciting about Fjell is his team is driven by the younger players. Though we've spoken about Ozun, Nathaniel Brown playing as a left back, really like what he's brought since Hecking sort of integrated him into the first team. He's definitely their best first choice left back. But you've got guys like Okunuki, who they signed, who was part of the Japanese national team during the last international break. So he's clearly showed some really good promise. And look, this team is slowly transitioning into a more interesting side than they were over the past few seasons, and a part of that has to do with Fjell's game style. Now, his last time in the Zweite Bundesliga with Dresden wasn't particularly sustainable, and the biggest problem for them was they couldn't score goals, as they weren't as effective in the final third. But you can see this team has an identity, and post the Robert Klaus era, you could make a big case that under Marcus Weinzierl, which was never the right hire, I think we can all agree that that was just a weird hire, the team has started to get some identity, and they actually play relatively attractive football if the situation allows it.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, very similar to their local rivals, Greuther Fürth. It's a very, very young roster. They have five players in the starting 11 on the weekend who were under the age of 23. And guys like Chan Uzun, for example, 17 years old, and he's your first choice penalty taker. So that tells you a lot about kind of the identity of this club. But what I really like about this roster is kind of the resilience that they have despite being such a young team. They've never lost two matches in a row this season, despite really poor results like the 5-1 before the international break. And even looking at individual players like Uzun, for example, he misses the penalty in the first half, but then plays a crucial role in scoring that 2-1 in the second half. So, yeah, there's young players taking over a really big role in this team, and I think that Christian Fjell's doing an excellent job of kind of working in players like Marquez, players like Jamare, players like Matenu, who have a bit of experience at big clubs or in the Bundesliga, and using them to kind of offer the backbone for an exciting crop of young players.
Yeah, and look, I think that's par for the course in any sort of sport, whether it's football, it's Aussie rules in my neck of the woods, or NFL, where you've got to have a really good mix of experienced players who have been in there and done that, but also you need the next generation who are going to push the club further forward, not just in the short term, but for the long term. Now, it's always debatable in German football in particular whether those players are going to be driving that club for 10, 15 years. It's quite often that other clubs will notice the talent and have the finances to do so. But as you said, you know, the fact that they've found sort of a good blend, you've got guys like Lucas Schleimer as well, who a few years ago came out of complete nowhere, but he's also found a place in the team. And they have that flexibility as well, because Schleimer can play as a number nine. We've seen in one of the games this season, can't remember the game. This is how memory works. Where they chucked Ozan as a number nine, and they were like, heck, you go forward and do something, and he did, which was I think it was the Hanover game. But so like they've got good versatility. They're very strong with the wide play going forward. Now at times they can be exploited because Brown likes to get a bit forward. Jimmer is known for wanting to get forward into deeper areas. Their centre back pairing has always been relatively suspect. I thought Marquez was okay until he got sent off. When Matenya absolutely sold him high and dry, and he hacked the hell out of the Herder player, and it's just unfortunate. But you can see what they're doing. Like I think that's clear. Is that you can say that Nürnberg is starting to build and identify a footballing brand that, like, promotion's not the goal for them this year, but over the next couple of years, if Fjell can continue to develop and they can continue to make smart recruitments of young players, then you can say in, I don't know, 2026, I know it's a long way away, it seems, but that seems more realistic than say, oh, well, we think we're going to get promoted this year. I think they've taken a much more realistic approach this season. The squad definitely seems to have a bit more versatility, and you can see where they want to be in the future.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, I think Nürnberg is a club that I think we can all hope to see back in the Bundesliga soon. Great stadium, great fan base, historic club. So it'd be great to see them then back where they belong.
100%, 37,320 made their way to the Max Morlock Stadion. Fantastic crowd. I think I read somewhere there was about 93,000 people that turned up to games on Sunday afternoon, the last three games of the match day. That's insane numbers, but it shows you not only the quality of teams in the Zweite Bundesliga in terms of their historic significance to the game in Germany, but also that this league is pumping and everyone... and. These are must-buy tickets. God, I'm scared when I have to go to Germany. I'm never going to get a ticket, but it's great to see. Hertha, just a quick word on them. They were disappointing. I think they really just, when they took the lead, they struggled to really control the tempo. Thought defensively they really were holding on for quite a long time, and once the dam broke, it did seem like Nürnberg were able to get not only the competitive advantage in the game, but they really made it difficult for Herder to create the chances. They kept Tabakovic, who's been on a bit of a cold streak of recent. So we'll see. I see my notes has gone a bit blah, blah, but I know they've got Paderborn next week, so that'll be a good test for them. Nürnberg are at Holstein Kiel. Let's take our final break. And on the other side, we'll discuss our final three games of Match Day 10, starting in Elversberg, when Elversberg hosted Eintracht Braunschweig. When it comes to promoted sides, Elversberg have been in really good form. Unbeaten in their last five and starting to ascend up the table, they welcome a Braunschweig side that is ailing, very much coughing and spluttering and really hasn't been able to get their season underway. And for those who had to make the 500-kilometer journey from Braunschweig to Elversberg on a Friday, well, they left extraordinarily disappointed. Final score being 3-0 in favour of Horststeffen's side. Goal scorers being Paul Stock, Paul Varner, who became Elversberg's youngest ever goal scorer in all competitions at 17 years, 9 months and 27 days. And Joseph Boyamba also getting on the score sheet. I think Elversberg, such a pretty side to watch. They play very entertaining football. Some of us have likened them to what Magdeburg does. In terms of they're happy to play risky football, but I think this Elversberg team in particular has shown they're a bit more versatile than Magdeburg, and they're willing to rein it in a little bit when it's required. But they're fun to watch. They're energetic in the final third, and we should talk about Varner because comes highly regarded from Bayern Munich on loan. You know, it's very much a sink or swim sort of situation for a young player to be brought into a promoted side in a very difficult division. But he's been mightily impressive, and he gets into such incredibly dangerous areas. And I know he's only just scored one goal so far, which he did on the weekend. But there's a lot of optimism, and you put him in that team with Rockhelt as a wide player. You've got very strong midfield play with Shahin, and you get the sense that they're building something quite interesting, even if they're not able to sustain it for the full year. There is a feeling that, you know, Elversberg are not only just here to play attractive football, but results-driven football as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Elversberg is a club, which we saw last year as well, their ability to kind of implement young talent from Bundesliga clubs is really, really good. They're a great destination for loaned players with the style of football that they play. You saw Nick Voltomada last season there from Werder Bremen, ended up being the player of the year in the second Bundesliga, but also Ben Bobtien from Mainz 05, also a really, really good season at Elversberg. So it's a quiet destination, a great spot to kind of go under the radar and develop as a young footballer. And we're seeing that with Walid Fagir from VfB Stuttgart as a center forward, and of course the main attraction here, Paul Vanna. But as you said, I mean, they're not really similar to Magdeburg. I think that Magdeburg is a lot more courageous in their pressing, a lot, I mean, not take away from them, but I guess the best word to say is just they're much more wild in how they want to play football. But the fact that another club has been promoted from the Dritte Bundesliga and are being rewarded for playing attacking football, for being rewarded for playing a possession-heavy style is really, really good to see, because you see a lot in German football, kind of this move to constant gegenpressing, constant against the ball work, set pieces, right? And it's good to see a club whose core identity is still playing football with a small budget being able to thrive in the second Bundesliga. And they've won now, or they've gone unbeaten in their last six. But even before then, when they weren't winning games, you still saw performances throughout. Against Hannover on the opening match, they were excellent and then really deserved to win. Against Kaiserslautern, they were the better side for 60 minutes. So, and Hansa Rostock, of course, I mean, that was one of the wildest comebacks in second Bundesliga history. So there's been a lot of signs, even before this unbeaten streak, that Elversberg are definitely of the quality to remain in the second Bundesliga.
Absolutely. And the one thing that we always talk about with promoted sides is that, you know, what gets them there isn't always what they use in the opening phases of the season. It's this sort of, okay, we want to survive. Our goal is to avoid relegation. And Elversberg have really sort of tossed that manual out and said, we're going to play our game. We want to dictate the play. And teams have to beat us. We're not going to have to put ourselves in a negative situation from the outset. And it's really commendable of what Horst Steffen has implemented in this squad. Now, he's been there for quite some time. He's been able to build Elversberg up from a team in the Regionalliga to the Zweite Bundesliga. They've had consecutive promotions, and whilst it's probably long odds that they might do it again and make a triple promotion, which would be in and of itself incredible, they're building the foundations of making themselves as a stable Zweite Bundesliga team. And it's hard not to get carried away 10 matches into the season, what they've done. Because after the 5-0 defeat at home to Fortuna Düsseldorf, where they were just dissected up the middle in particular, they've become a lot more stable defensively. 14 points out of a possible 18, four wins and two draws. That gets you a number. But also a player that we probably haven't spoken about yet, Frederik Jaechel, who was with Bielefeld last season on loan from RB Leipzig, was a bit up and down, you know, was often part of the scapegoat. Sort of, he was an easy target to blame, him and Oliver Husing last season, but really has fitted nicely into this defensive core. And whether it's been with Kevin Conrad or Carlo Zickinger, you know, Jaechel has shown his versatility, very good in the air, strong ball playing defender, and someone who, yeah, at some stage in his career is going to be a very stable Bundesliga defender. But in this Horst Steffen system in particular, he's definitely thriving, and it's quite impressive to see.
Yeah, I think it's genuinely impressive to see kind of Horst Steffen use a young back four or young defense in general. I mean, Christoph is 23 in goal. Van der Meersch is 24. Jekyll, 22. So to see kind of young players also thriving in the defense in a really, really attacking system is quite remarkable. Especially just last season, the back four was quite experienced for Elvis, but they had a very old back four. And to see kind of younger players now come in is always good to see.
Absolutely. On the other hand, Braunschweig, extremely poor, winless since match day three. They just look hopeless in the attacking area. That's their biggest weakness. Six goals scored all campaign. And you know, you spoke about it earlier in the podcast with Uja, how influential he is for that team. But they offered next to nothing. I think when Endo and Gomez came on, at halftime, Endo midway through the second half, they at least started getting the ball forward. But what they're doing is just not sustainable. Or it is sustainable. They're sustaining a level of inability to be attacking. And you just wonder how long Jens Hartl is going to get in the seat. You know, the next three games, Dusseldorf, the Derby game. I get the feeling if they lose the Derby game, he's not going to be there at all. I don't think he'll see the Osnabrück game. But those next two games in particular, if we're talking about staking your claim to keep your place in this role, they've got to start picking up results, and they've got to find a solution that enables them to unlock some sort of attacking form. Because again, six shots in 90 minutes, three of them were on target, but a lot of them were low percentage shots that, you know, Christoph was able to defend.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if it wasn't for Ron Torben Hoffmann, it also could have been four or five for them, if we're being honest. And I think that, you know, we talked about an ultra-competitive second Bundesliga where everyone can beat anyone, but it's really hard to see Braunschweig having a fighting chance this season as long as Uja remains on the sideline. I mean, he is a really, really good goal scorer despite his age. Really good aerial outlet, is perfect for kind of a club that doesn't get a lot of chances and often needs to just throw balls into the box and hope that an exceptional aerial target can convert. I think the best comparison I have to him is almost like the new version of Kumbela, if you can remember Kumbela from his time at Eintracht Braunschweig. That's what I would say Anthony Uja is. And like Kumbela, Braunschweig are not the same without him in the side. So I think Braunschweig will be returning to the third division next season, unfortunately.
It is definitely not looking good for them. Another team that is slowly entering a free fall is Hansa Rostock. They looked world beaters early on in the campaign, but they have been in a massively increased decline. And when they welcomed Holstein Kiel, they were hoping that they could turn the tide. When they opened the scoring on 18 minutes, thanks to Christian Kinsombi, they thought they might have been on their way. But Marcel Rapp had a trump card. Jan Vita Arp, someone who has not played a lot of minutes this season. He's been well down the order, but was given the start in this game alongside Benedikt Pichler, and he vindicated Rapp's decision to start him. Arp getting on the score sheet for the first time since match day 20 of last season. That was the 11th of February against Magdeburg. Rostock had chances in this game. Make no mistake. 23 chances, in fact. But that means nothing when you don't add to the one goal you have scored. Kiel, on the other hand, they scored twice in the space of 3 minutes after halftime. One through Nikolai Remberg, where Reuter wins the ball back inside the box, puts the ball across. Delightful. Remberg, affectionately known as Rambo, gets his first goal of the season. And then from a set piece, Timo Becker heads the ball into the back of the net. Initially not given as a goal, but VAR intervening, Richard Hempel, the referee, being shown the pictures, the ball was clearly over the line, and that is your final score. 3-1 at the Ostseestadion for Holstein Kiel, who move into third place, and ensuring that the top four sides in the Zweite Bundesliga all are from clubs in the north. Not sure where you want to tackle this one first. I guess we should talk about Kiel, because some had Kiel in a very high echelon of the table. Some, that's not me included. But they, look, they're not always going to be great offensively. They've shown that they can be quite inconsistent, but they're effective. They're really effective when they get their chances. And 10 shots on goal in the game, 5 of them on target, 3 of them ending in goals. The versatility of their goal-scoring output seems to be very apparent, that it's very much committee thinking and committee output. And look, you know, they're a team that had a lot of question marks coming into this season, but every time majority of the times they've been pressed this season, they've found answers.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, I mean, I had Holstein Kiel finishing third this season. They're in third right now. So from my perspective, stop the count, right? End it right here. But yeah, I mean, like you said at the very end, the whole squad is really, really coming together. You look at the players who didn't start this game, for example, you know, Bomoaka Simakala, he was going to be kind of one of the key players we all thought heading into this campaign. He's never actually really even come into his own at Kiel. Shuto Machino had a really, really good start to the campaign, but also has fallen off a little bit. Lewis Holtby also on the bench. We all know his creative qualities. Stefan Stripski only on the bench for this one. Probably he was by far their best player last season, and even this season, maybe their best attacking outlet. Ivasic is, I believe, a Serbian full international, also only on the bench. So these are the players that Kiel doesn't have starting the game, and it shows you just how much quality is throughout the team, how much goal-scoring quality they can have from various positions. You see Tilo Becker, the Etschalter player, coming in with a goal. Remberg, signed from Preußen Münster, who just got promoted from the fourth division last year, also getting on the score sheet. So, yeah, Kiel have a real whole squad mentality pulling the weight, and I think that's why they'll be able to kind of potentially come through in that third-place pick, even when individual players fall off form.
100%. If we look at Rostock, one win in their last seven, and the biggest thing that really stands out statistically is big chances missed. 19 in total, third worst in the Zweite Bundesliga stats, of course, from FOTMOB. Yeah, it was even apparent in this game in particular, where they have really good phases where they're dominating play and they seem in control. And, you know, the way that they've played this season, they have a bit more of the ball than you would typically have with an Alois Schwarz coach squad. But gosh, they're wasteful. And you look at, we spoke about it throughout the podcast, much like Magdeburg, their mistakes get punished brutally. And the second goal is a great example of that, where they cough up the ball, you know, in what should seem like a pretty harmless place to lose the ball. Kiel just quickly transitioned. They have numbers, weight of numbers, and then it's Remberg at the back post who eventually gets the goal. And I love the Sports Show highlights where they've got the two coaches and you see, you know, Alois Schwarz is about to, you know, pop a blood vessel, and then Marcel Rappu, you know, just absolutely pumped and he's amped and it's all great. And I think there's real frustration with where Rostock are at the moment, where they are clearly trying to redefine what makes them work after that strong start to the season. But every time they seem to make a key mistake, teams can transition quite easily. They do play quite, you know, their wider fullback players they like to get deep. But when they lose the ball, the three centre-backs aren't particularly versatile and they get exploited. And it was a case here where, you know, if you look at all three goals, there's a preventability about all three of them. And, you know, if this was a team that wanted to progress better than 13th, they're certainly doing it the hard way.
Yeah, and I think one of my biggest issues with Hansa remains kind of the striking options. Mm. I think you have Junior Brumado, you have Luca Hinterseer, Semi Gula, Perea, also from Stuttgart on loan. So you have a lot of strikers, but none of them are really actually the center forward that you would want to lead your team in the second Bundesliga. Maybe Luca Hinterseer for 3-4 years ago, but not right now. And I think that's a big issue, especially when you see how reliant they were for large stretches on Kai Peruga last season. It was clear that they needed another center forward to come in and be amongst the goals. And yeah, they haven't targeted that at all really correctly in the summer window, and they're suffering because of it.
Yeah, and they were equal worst goal-scoring team last season with 32 alongside Nürnberg. And whilst Nürnberg have shown a lot more versatility going forward, you know, Hansa's 11 goals in 10 games has them as equal third worst in the division alongside Osnabrück. So, yeah, it's really hard to see where the solutions are coming from. But, you know, Wiesbaden away presents an opportunity against a team that is notoriously bad as an attacking force. And then it's Hertha and Magdeburg before the break. And big challenge for them. It really is. And we'll see what they can come up with. Kiel have Nürnberg, Osnabrück and Hamburg. They feel like they could probably win two of those three games. The Hamburg game might actually be one of those games because they match up really well against Hamburg, especially Tim Walter's coached Hamburg. Yeah, that should be a fascinating game before the next international break. We'll quickly skirt through to our final game of the match day. Osnabrück and Wiesbaden went head-to-head at the Bremer Brücke. Final score was 2-0 for Wiesbaden. Hyunju Lee, who's on loan from Bayern, gets on the goal sheet. And then Robin Hoyce's free kick made it too. But yeah, Osnabrück, boy, oh, they were wasteful in this one as well. They actually have shown, especially at home, that they can be, they're happy to play two ways. They can get forward. They played really high tempo. I think it was like the opening 15 minutes of the second half was end-to-end, which you just don't expect from two promoted sides, but they were both going for it, which was great to see from a neutral standpoint. But the two goals they give up, the first one is an individual error at a really dangerous place, and it was very well worked in the end from Wiesbaden to Iredale, get the ball across, great ball in, and Lee gets the touch. And the second goal is a free kick, which was just a beauty of a free kick off the crossbar. And is typically, in most people's books, very high quality. But big win for Wiesbaden. First win since match day three. First clean sheet since match day three when they beat Karlsruhe. We know goals have been really hard to come by for this team. If you put it into perspective, they've only scored 9 times in the league so far. Less than a goal a game. Only Braunschweig is worse than them in this category. But defensively, they're solid. And Florian Stritzel in goal, who is an experienced campaigner, again, another strong performance for him. And when Wiesbaden were shooting themselves in the foot and giving the ball away in their own penalty area, Stritzel was there to make the day.
Yeah, I know that Aussie slander isn't really looked upon too nicely on this podcast, but Iredale has struggled a little bit to adjust to the second Bundesliga. I think that we saw it ahead of the season with the departure of Benedikt Holaba, just how important he was for them going forward, and that's kind of carried over, especially how late in the summer that deal was for Holaba to leave Wiesbaden. One player, though, I mean, we spoke about the Bayern loanee, Paul Manna, earlier, but I think another Bayern loanee is Lee. He's been really, really good for Wiesbaden, coming up with a goal this weekend. And then in general, I mean, a great attacking player, a great creative player who's shown a lot of quality. So it'd be really, really interesting to see where Wiesbaden would be had Lee not adjusted immediately to the second Bundesliga standard, because I don't think it was outright obvious that Lee would right away come into this team and be up to par. So, yeah, Wiesbaden, as expected, are being carried by their defensive standard. I think that's going to be something that remains until the very end. We saw it throughout almost every game that Wiesbaden is a difficult team to break down. Even in the Pokal against RB Leipzig a few weeks ago, we saw just how difficult Wiesbaden could be. And winning these games ultimately against Osnabrück are what will decide if Wiesbaden stay in the division or go back down again for what feels like the 100th time.
Yeah, they are a bit of a yo-yo club when it comes to it. But, yeah, look, this is Kaczynski football. It's all about being stable defensively. I love the point about Lee. I think one thing that almost gets undersold is he's a fighter. He's not afraid to get in and amongst the dirty work and get in the duels and throw his weight around. He's quite fat. He's good. I mean, it bodes well for Bayern if they want to sell him or, you know, sell him for $15 million and a club pays well beyond the expected. But yeah, I think he's been really good for them. And it just makes you wonder the Hollebeck stuff where, you know, he doesn't even really play for Union. And
yeah,
it's like, why did they sign him then? Same with Kaufmann as well, you know. Those are two guys that maybe they get loan deals in the winter in the Zweite Bundesliga because they're both really good players. They should be playing here.
Union are ruining the second Bundesliga and not even taking advantage of it.
Exactly. This is the case. We'll talk about Osnabrück for a quick second. We know what their defensive issues are. We saw Timo Biermann coming into the side for the first time this season with Maxwell Jamfi. It was kind of better. I mean, they were beaten by an individual error that led to a goal on a set piece, which you can live with a set piece because it was just incredible bit of individual quality. And it was one of their attacking players in Osnabrück, in I think Wolf, you know, coughing the ball up and putting the defense under immense pressure. But they seemed a little bit more stable. But what does that look like against Fürth, Kiel and Braunschweig? And I penciled the Braunschweig game in particular on the 11th as the game that, you know, if they want to separate themselves from Braunschweig and put themselves in a position to avoid automatic relegation. That's a game that they're going to have to win, and a win away from home, which is something they have not done this season. Wiesbaden, big game coming up against Rostock. Another important encounter for them where, given where form is at, they'll want to get a result, but then Fortuna Düsseldorf and Kaiserslautern are going to be tricky opponents for them. But I think they're, you know, if you look at both sides, Osnabrück are where we expected them to be, fighting for the relegation. And I think with Wiesbaden, it's a wait and see kind of thing, because I just don't think, with the lack of goal scoring output, what they're doing is sustainable. And eventually they're going to be on the back of it, you know, hypothetically, but it does happen. They might be on the back of like a 5-0, and it'll be like, well, this is coming, because they haven't been able to score goals. And, you know, even though we saw the two lower scoring teams both survive last season, it's very rare that we see that kind of statistical output come to fruition. If you're looking at these two teams right now, if you had to pick one that would stay up, who would you back?
I think I'd have to back Wiesbaden. I think that they, at least you could say, okay, we have the strong defensive structure versus Osnabrück. I think are still searching for it in both directions. But I think Osnabrück have also taken good steps forward in the past few weeks. I mean, you also look at where they were unbeaten against. They didn't lose against Kaiserslautern. They beat Hamburg, and they didn't lose against Fortuna Düsseldorf. So all those results are really impressive. And also a guy like Michel Cuisance, I mean, it seems that they've really gotten a good bit of quality out of him for a player who, you know, has a lot of mentality issues, has a lot of question marks hanging over his career when you look at where he should be right now and where he is. But so far, so good, I think, with Cuisance. And if they can keep him kind of in a motivated point of view, then I think they have a chance at least.
Yeah, that's the key with Osnabrück and Cuisance, because he's been very good in the games that he's featured, but it's keeping him engaged. And, you know, because once you lose him, you can't get him back. That's just the, you know, and other clubs have found that out. When it was at Gladbach, he was thriving, decided to leave, didn't get his way at Bayern, so he left. The Venezia stuff didn't work. And, you know, he's, unfortunately for him, when you start going down divisions and you have that mentality, got to look internally. Got to look at yourself as an individual. And because he's got talent that a lot of there are guys in first divisions don't possess. He's very good technically, but he just doesn't. You know, it's all up there. It's all up here.
Yeah.
So it'd be a shame. That should do it for us, Adam. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can our wonderful listeners find you and your fantastic work?
Yeah, I would just say the best place to go is on Twitter, @ets, Adam Kahn, @ets. And from there, you can find all of my remaining links, whether it be my newsletter or my scouting work at Nordensa. They're also tagged there. So, yeah, everything can be found directly there.
Absolutely worth the follow. That's it from us. Thank you so much for listening to this week's edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We'll be back next week to discuss all of the action from match day 11. So thank you so much. Have a fantastic weekend. Keep the ball rolling. And we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.